Hello, Yvonne. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Hi, it's so great to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm excited for our conversation today. You have a very interesting story about yourself, and you've recently, or not recently, written this amazing book called The Prophetess, which is about, you know, a young woman's coming of age and dealing with the sort of anxieties and tribulations of adolescence. And at the same time, you've incorporated this awesome, like, Jewish mystical element into it to really show, you know, how community connection and a connection with God can really help transcend battles and overcome great things. And it was a pleasure to read what I did. And, you know, it's about fulfilling dreams and finding, growing into your gifts, as you say.
Yes, that's right.
And I believe it's been a project that's long in the making. Is that correct?
That's right. It took me about 20 years to write it.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. I mean, it's well worth the read. And, you know, I would certainly encourage everyone to get a copy, and I'll put a link to it in the description. And, you know, we'll talk about it now. Like, I think today, though, what we're going to talk about a lot is Jewish mysticism, because we're both absolutely fascinated by that topic. How did you sort of get into this world of mysticism?
When I was a kid, and as I was growing up, I had a lot of questions about the world and about life. I really wanted to understand, like, who are we? What's our purpose in life? What does it mean to be a soul? I had all these questions. And, you know, in the where I was raised, so I'm Jewish, but I wasn't raised in a very observant world where I didn't really have much access to Jewish wisdom. And mm-hmm. I had a lot of trouble getting answers to my questions. And even so, I as I learned more about Judaism, it still took me a while to get to, like, to realize that the answers to a lot of these questions were within Jewish mysticism. They're the questions about, like, who we are and, like, how, you know, what's God like, and how are we related to each other and to God, and what does it mean to be a soul? Those questions, I feel like a lot of people have those questions these days, that they wonder about these kinds of things, and that the answers to these questions are very meaningfully answered within the body of Jewish mysticism, in the Kabbalah and all the related materials to that. And I think that, you know, some of the teachers that I've learned with have really expressed the view that although maybe some of those materials were understood as secret for a long time, that our generation needs them. And that it's, you know, it's important because we have so many questions about life, and in so many places, like, not a lot of access to spirituality, that there's a lot that we can learn in this generation today from those kinds of materials.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you bring up an interesting point about, like, wisdom and spirituality, and how that is a slightly different aspect to the sort of religious side of a religion, I suppose. But it is interesting, because those questions a lot of people do struggle with, you know, myself included. And, you know, they're not the kind of questions that people do have answers for. I mean, they might have their own version of an answer, but very rarely is it satisfying until you find something like a wisdom tradition, you know, like there is in the Jewish tradition, or in many different cultures. And, you know, the ancient teachings and stuff like that, they really have a way of, like, you know, connecting at a much deeper level than just the knowledge, right? Like, right. It's one thing to just know some stuff or to be able to recite something. Right. But these wisdom traditions, they really, and I don't fully know how to explain it, but it does connect at a deeper level, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the first materials that I ever encountered when I was in, I might have been at a conference, and they had, like, a, you know, a little session, like a breakout group where people could learn texts or that kind of thing. I feel like when I first began to encounter Jewish mystical texts, like, I had no idea what they were talking about, but they felt true.
Yes.
And I think that that's the thing about it. There's, like, a kind of ring of truth that certain things have, and that they felt like there was something about it that felt right, even though I really didn't understand. And I think that there's a certain part of us maybe that is drawn, or maybe not everyone, depend, many people, that's like drawn to those kinds of questions and those kinds of truths. And when we get access to them, at least for me, it was like I wanted to understand more and more about that.
Yeah. No, for sure. And it is interesting because a lot of the, like, if you go through some of these texts, like word for word, it often makes it more confusing than it does enlightening, right? Because, you know, you run into all sorts of paradoxes and complicated versions of things. And, you know, a lot of the stuff, because it was written so long ago, like, it's hard to apply it today without a great teacher who can sort of translate it into a modern version, right? But there is that ring of truth that it just connects with your soul. And I wonder if, I mean, I'm sure it's related to, like, whoever, whatever culture a person is born into or involved with, or just chooses to get involved with too, that it has different, like, levels of connection and meaning. Because, you know, as we are raised in particular environments and with particular cultures, like, that way of seeing the world just becomes our vision of reality. And it changes, of course, and it's differing person to person. But when you sort of encounter these ancient texts that are centered around the culture you're from, then I think it really rings true as well in that respect.
Yeah, I think there might be something to that. It's interesting because as I was, doing some spiritual exploration when I was like in my teens and early 20s, I was reading all kinds of things, right? Mm. I was reading the Tao Te Ching. I was exploring lots of things. I went to Johns Hopkins and I minored in religious studies so that I could learn all different kinds of different kinds of traditions. And at a certain point, like, it kind of hit me that I should be learning my own tradition too. And that really, drew me forward in a way that some of those other things, you know, there was some wisdom there. I could sense it, but I didn't really know, and I think many people don't, like, the strength and depth of the Jewish tradition on these materials. And I think they haven't been commonly taught. And I didn't really understand, like, you know, it's an entire universe of materials that can illuminate so much. And to just go back to what you were saying, I mean, I think that a lot of the materials, at least in the Jewish tradition, were actually intentionally written in, like, a very cryptic way. Yeah. So that, you know, so that they could only be understood if they were taught. And only, like, the written down materials is only kind of an arrow or a taste or an outline. Until you're learning with a teacher and being able to, you know, have someone kind of elucidate the different pieces and explain how it all works, you know. And I feel like I'm still so much a novice in this, really, very, very much. But I think that everything that I've learned has just been so enriching and helped me to feel like I understand, my relationship to the world and how to be a stronger person. That I feel this has been such a useful set of materials to learn, and maybe not useful is not the right word. It's like enriching is more what I mean to say.
Empowering. Yeah. Not in the sort of conventional sense of power, but just personally empowering, right?
Yeah, and just like
finding that place in the world.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps enlightening is the word, right?
Yes,
to go
that's
with
right.
within
yeah.
with enlightenment and,
exactly
and that sort
right.
of thing.
Yes, that's right.
Because that's what it is, right? Like, even with my sort of limited experience with it as well, it just does that, and it's hard to explain, and it's not like necessarily a step by step guide of like do X, Y, and Z, and then this will happen. You know, I guess there is some of that, particularly if you're getting into the various rituals and practices and things like that, then, okay, yeah, there's a step-by-step version of things to do. But a lot of it's more just about connecting with yourself and with, you know, God and your soul, or, you know, different ways of characterizing similar phenomena, right? Depends how you want to talk about it. But it is, and it just changes your perspective on things. So you start to just see things differently that aren't necessarily directly related, right?
Right.
And it's a wonderful study for some reason. It's beautiful, and it's also survived, what, I don't know, 6,000+ years in the Jewish tradition. Yes. I mean, that's a hell of a long time for stuff to survive.
Right.
Not much else has survived in such great detail.
Yeah. Well, so I was going to pick up on some of the things you were saying about what you said about enlightening really struck me, because I think it's the right word, and it's because, there's two different things I want to say. This thing I want to say about enlightening is the right word, because I think, one of the things that I've learned is that a part of this whole growth process in life is kind of receiving light. It's actually like, light being kind of wisdom and blessings that come from a kind of higher place, and that if the wider we are as kind of vessels to receive that light, the more light we can receive. And that's like the conduit. This is one of the things that I said in my book, like that's the sort of conduit through which like all the blessings that we receive in our life comes that way, in the sort of the form of light. I've heard, and also that's kind of consciousness and wisdom that comes to us. And it's all like in Judaism, like the metaphor for that is light, right? That's like, it's actually light coming to us. And so the more that we receive of that light, the more enlightened we are.
Yeah.
The other thing that I wanted to say is that I think, a theme amongst many different teachers that I've been listening to and working with is this idea that it's not just about understanding, but about becoming the best person we can be, like being the best Yvonne I can be, being the best Shane you can be, like being the best that we ourselves can be, and growing into that. And that's why, like, the theme of my book is like grow into your gifts, because it's this sort of idea, like we have so much potential to grow into, and the more that we can kind of transform ourselves and become, it is about becoming the best versions of ourselves. And that means things like kindness. It means things like, strong relationships. It means connecting to other people. It means being righteous in all the kind of really meaningful ways, like not self-righteous, but like, good people of integrity, a person who does the best they can. And I think that's actually, as it's been taught to me, that's really what it's for, like overcoming our own pain, overcoming the things that have hurt us, and becoming the best of ourselves. And, if it's just about kind of like understanding the structure of the universe, then like that's good. But like that doesn't make much difference. Really. Yeah. What really matters
doesn't help
is
much.
Like how much, how we become better in the world and make the world better through what we've learned.
Absolutely. And I think you touched on a really important point there at the end, which is that, and this is something that many teachers have taught throughout the ages, which is that, to change the world, you have to start with yourself, right?
Yeah.
I can't recall exactly who, but Gandhi at least was one of the people who said, be the change you wish to see in the world, right? And I think, in the Jewish tradition, there's like the saying, to be a light unto the world, right? And that ties back into what we were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, a light unto the nations.
Yeah.
And to me, what part of what that means is really like, we see a lot of the time that the world is a bit of a shit show. And there's a lot of stuff happening, and it's not, fun, and there's a lot of suffering going on for, just about everyone, perhaps to varying degrees. But, very few people look at the world and say everything is wonderful, right? Except those who appear to be enlightened to some degree or other, and they see the suffering, and yet they say that and mean it too. They're not just saying it like as a nicety or a soft cover up. It's really just how they see things, and that and they'll tell you that comes from within, right? And as you had just said, it's like part of that is battling your demons, right? Getting, healing your pain and your trauma and really, you know, coming into contact with it and not necessarily, and having, I guess, the courage to be able to do that, which is really difficult to do because our instinct a lot of the time is to just push it away, suppress it. I don't want to feel that stuff. It sucks. It feels horrible. I don't want to look at, you know, the sort of bad things that have happened to me. And it is often, a lot of times, just a perception of how you see it, right? And what's interesting, just as a sort of side point, is like one of the ways that people do it these days is like psychotherapy, right? That's a common way to approach it. And, you know, sort of the process of that is very often just being there with a trusted, you know, person who will walk with you through dealing with all of your stuff. And when you do that, you kind of also realize it's the monster's not as big as I thought it was, right? Like, and there's the very also another famous analogy, or I don't know what the right word is, which is, you know, when you shine the light on the darkness, it basically just disappears, and it's not a big scary shadow monster that it feels like when it's behind you. And yeah, this has been, you know, entrenched in mysticism for years. I mean, not years, thousands of years, right? Which is that same sort of thing. And, you know, you see it a lot in stories, right? Like that's how it's often conveyed, at least on a sort of like more broad scale, right? Which is interesting because, you know, this is also part of like your book, which is, it's a story, right? It's a novel. It's about, you know, these various characters and their relationships and their struggles. And that's how we learn things. And as opposed to, you know, you having written a prescriptive like document of saying like, well, if you want to fix your life, here's these 10 steps you must do. Like, okay, perhaps there's a place for that, right? But that doesn't connect like a book or a well-written story connects with people. And so, yeah, I mean, how choosing that medium, was that like just a natural flow for you? I suppose it must have been, right? 20 years in the making.
Yeah, wow, there's so much to say in response to what you said that I
get
like
carried
I
away
step
sometimes.
Back, but I also want to answer your most recent question. So let me go through all of it. We got time. Let's just say, the one thing that really rang for me that I wanted to make sure to say about in terms of Jewish tradition is this concept that we have that's called emunah, faith. And faith. It's like translated faith, but that's not a very good translation really, because it's a much more active thing. I think when people think about faith, they think it means like suspending disbelief. Whereas what we really mean when we say emunah is like a much more active believing. And I think that what you were saying, like an active believing that the world is in God's hand, an active believing that like ultimately everything is for the good, that ultimately there's a purpose to all of this and it's going to work out in the end. And I think that kind of, it's not something that, like, so I've heard people say, like, you're lucky you have faith, I don't have faith. And I think that's not at all how it is. Faith, emunah, is something that you work at. It's something, it's not something that you're kind of, like, magically granted. It's like a point of view that you cultivate. And it doesn't imply at all that there's not work to do in the world. I mean, I'm a person who's, you know, does and has done work in the world. I think that trying to make the world a better place is a part of our responsibility as human beings. And I think there's a lot, there's, as you said, there's no limit to the number of things that could be done to make the world better today.
Yeah.
I mean, you can pick, right? Like, you don't have to think, the only things that are wrong with the world are the things that I'm not interested in, so I guess that they're not for me. No, any person, any place in the world,
absolutely,
has some way they can make the world better right now. And so I think that that's really important. And important, it's not, Judaism doesn't say, I'm not saying that a person should like go sit on a mountain and can, you know, commune. Right. There's there's like so, there's work to be done. But I was just sharing this in a different format. But Rav Kook, the great rabbi at the beginning of the State of Israel, teaches this sort of like teaches that like that there's this kind of like there's all these different kind of levels of, you know, where we are, like our relationship to the world. But then he also teaches this great teaching that I found, that when we forget the individual soul, when we stop paying attention to the inner life of the person, everything becomes confusing and unclear. Therefore, the beginning of tshuva, and by that we mean like spiritual growth, return, growth, is the return to oneself, to the source of one's soul.
Mm.
And so I think, I mean, there's this idea, right, that like we have work to do in the world, but that if we forget to take care of ourselves, to nurture our own souls and, you know, our bodies, our emotions, all of that, if we can't, you know, we have to start with that work. And also, I hope we don't, you know, and it sometimes we, I mean, in my life, sometimes I started with the doing and the, you know, the trying to make a difference in the world. And I think that really matters too. But one way or another, like we are going to have to deal with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key part that we, that we have to deal with. And yet I wouldn't want to imply that that's the only thing we have to deal with. There's a kind of dance. Sure.
It's all about balance, right?
Yes. So I wanted to, just to answer your other question, what was it? It was about like how I got to write in a story format. So I'm a writer first. Like I was writing when I was in elementary school, and I had wanted to tell this story for a long time. Stories I find is, you know, what, like you said, a very important way to help people learn things that maybe would be harder for them to internalize, if they were just, you know, reading like a, you know, an essay.
Yeah.
Although, you know, those can be powerful too. But I started working on this book out of like sort of my own quest to kind of understand what's our relationship with God, you know, what is like, what's sort of a Jewish concept of prophecy, and like, why do we say that prophecy ended? And what's kind of available to us spiritually at this kind of stage of history, and kind of like, you know, what would happen if you were called for something that seemed bigger than you could ever imagine. And you know, I wanted to understand those questions and was kind of learning them for myself, and at the same time putting them into this book over the course of 20 years.
Yeah. And so did you find that, you know, because it's interesting that I think a lot of people have that, well, actually, I don't know this to be true, but certainly I've had a similar experience of like feeling like a destiny for something great, but not necessarily wanting it per se, or like striving, or it's not that, like, I mean, you know, when I sort of explain this to people, I feel like I'm coming across like a, you know, some like a narcissist, sort of like, oh, I'm destined for great things or whatever it is. And it's like, it's a, you know, it's hard to explain that. That's not what I'm talking about. It's like, I don't know what it is, but I often have this feeling like, you know, I'm meant to be doing big things. Now, mm-hmm. Do I want to be doing those things? I mean, not actively necessarily. Why is that feeling there? I don't know. Therapy hasn't really helped me answer that question. So, I mean, what have you found with like sort of, you know, that sort of line of thinking? Like, is that something that you've experienced as well? Or was it more theoretical for you?
Yeah, wow. Well, let me say this first, that I think that Judaism's perspective about this, like what I've learned and sort of internalized, is this kind of like this two pocket story, right? That like in one pocket, you're supposed to keep like the whole world was created for me. And in the other pocket, you're supposed to keep a note that says I'm nothing but dust and ashes. And then like the wisdom is knowing which one to look at when, right?
Yeah.
Like, which, that's, I mean, a good point. I think that there's, you know, every human being has infinite precious value, and if you're alive, you have something that you're here to do. And also, like, you're just one of how many 7 billion people on the planet?
Yeah, seven. For now.
And you're just one of those, you know, one of many, many, many people that have something important to do in the world. And but that doesn't make your thing that you are here to do any less significant. It's like incredibly, incredibly important what you're here to do. And I'm like thinking, reflecting on some of the things that I've heard. Like one of my teachers, Rev. Abraham Sutton, I've heard him say like God cares about the diamonds. Like we think of like the mountain, like, you know, like the gigantic things, but diamonds are so small. But like we're like that. We're small, but we're diamonds. Like every single one is incredibly precious. And so that's who you are. Yeah. That's who we all are. We're like the diamonds that have this, you know, incredible preciousness. But the other thing that I learned from Sarah Judith Schneider, also one of my teachers, is, you know, that like our souls are here to get some work done. Like we have things to do in sort of an infinite plan. And it's, you know, both like our responsibility and also maybe our sort of fate to fulfill that. But I think the more that we actually pursue the things that we're meant to do, like the easier a road it is. Like if you're kind of like going about, like if you're like kind of resisting every step of the way the thing that you're here to do, then that might be an unpleasant ride.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're like kind of leaning in and taking on everything that, you know, that you know that you're here meant to do and like loving every step of it, then that could be a really fun life. I think it's like in some ways, like it's, you know, like with many things, it's kind of our attitude to, you know, our purpose that really makes the difference.
Absolutely. And it's also, you know, I like what you said about how there's that, you know, constant battle between, not battle, but you have to balance between those two sides of like, you know, the world was created for you and, you know, you're a sort of just a piece of everything, right? And it's very true. And what I think is also important is that, you know, like when I say great things, it's not necessarily like great success in a sort of material world or, you know, fame or fortune or anything like that. Like, I mean, I get that that's some conception of great, but that's, I mean, you know, fleeting. And I think maybe it would be possible to say that everyone is destined for greatness because of the crucial part that we all play in the bigger scheme of things, right? And like you just need to, you know, sort of have some version of the butterfly effect to know how much of a difference the tiniest thing can make, right? I mean, just as an example, like this conversation that we're having now, right? Seemingly just a conversation, right? But let's say one person listens to it, just one, and that person then has gained something from it. Don't know what, maybe just a little bit of inspiration to believe in themselves or something like that, right? That can kickstart a huge chain reaction that would continue potentially for generations to come, right? All from this sort of our conversation that you and I are having. And I mean, I'm not saying it will happen, but it's like, it's reasonable to think that it could happen. And it's not, and it actually has nothing to do with either of the two of us specifically because we're special or whatever.
Although, I mean, the difference could be to the two of us, right?
There's 100%, that, right?
We're here, it's to, you know, we could walk away with meaning from this night that makes a difference in our lives forever too.
And it will, for sure.
Yeah.
It will, because everything has an effect on us, right?
Yeah. I think
every conversation.
But I want to say that bigger than just, you know, the idea of kind of the butterfly effect makes it seem like it's kind of by chance. Whereas, I mean, I guess in my Amuna world, in my world, it's true. All by design, right? And so it's not like a chance. It's like
a destiny.
There's a plan here, and we don't really understand the whole plan, but we have things to do here. And I think that in my experience, like the more that I can the more that I do like sort of my meditating, the more that I do my like, you know, prayers, you know, prayers with real intention, mm-hmm. the more that I'm kind of like, you know, trying to kind of center to like my true self and like be connecting to like higher wisdom, the more that I can sometimes sense those things.
Yeah. Right?
Like kind of get a sense of like, to call this person now, right? Mm. Or like, post this today. Like, I can't quite explain
that intuition.
Have you ever had this feeling that's like, you got to do this right now? Or like, you know.
Absolutely.
So I think that those kinds of, like, those kinds of sort of insight intuition moments are like the, like, I see them as, you know, being able to sort of tune in to mm-hmm. the sort of greater purpose and sort of see what my role is in a, and kind of think, I don't really understand why I should do this thing right now, but I feel like I should do it, and like I'm just going to do it. And sometimes miraculous things come out of those quick things. And so I think, so in Jewish tradition, we call those things hashgacha pratit, like the idea that that God's hand is always sort of working in the background in the world. And if we mm-hmm. can kind of tune into that and sort of see where you fit into that plan. And I think, you know, that requires a little bit of chutzpah maybe, or like a little bit of willingness to think, no, what I'm doing actually really does matter. But I think the more that we can kind of tune in and believe that what we do matters, hopefully we can kind of get done what we're here to do, but also it's like a very fulfilling thing to feel like, you know, I'm a soul here in this world and there's something that I'm supposed to be doing and I'm doing it. Like the more that we are at our most fulfilled when we are doing what we're here to do in the world. And so that's not like it's for the greater good, but it's also, you know, for our own great fulfillment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, right? Because in a lot of like Western culture today, there's big resistance to those kinds of thinking of like, there's, you know, a divine plan or a destiny or a fate or whatever you want to call it, or God's hand at work. There's a lot of resistance to that. And I think it was like Eckhart Tolle who spoke about this, that sort of inspired this line of thinking for me, which was that part of it is that we want to control things for whatever reason. As humans, we want to control as much of our lives as we can. And in reality, that is very little. We like to think it's a lot, but really it's not. And that's
that
a hard,
all the more in the last year, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's completely obvious now.
I mean, there was absolutely no one who could have predicted this was coming, or maybe they did, maybe there was someone, but you know, most people were like, you know, a pandemic in this year, like, no, the scientists, they'll fix it. Like, what do you, right. You know, that's, it's not a real thing. Or even if they did, that it would last for so long, or that it would have the kind of impact that it did. And there's so much, right? And it was so uncertain because no one knew if you were going to get sick. You didn't know if you did get sick, how that would affect you, because it affected people differently with seemingly similar conditions. What would happen after that, you know, because millions of people died from it and millions more didn't, with thus far no like explanation, right? And right. So when we have to face that reality of not being in control, it can be very scary, because there is that sense of like, well, my everything will fall apart if I give up control of my life, right? Mm-hmm. And I can very much empathize with that, because you kind of feel like, well, then what you do doesn't necessarily have any meaning, or what's the point of doing anything if it's all going to be done for you anyway? And it's like, okay, it's a bit of rationalization, you know, that kind of thinking. But as you say, like, it's a point of view, and you can cultivate different points of view. And from the same situation, one can choose to start viewing it in a different way, which is to say that, like, okay, well, things are meant to happen in a certain way, and they do, and I don't know why, but it's okay that I don't know why. And you're right that once you start to do it and you see it have what you perceive as good results, that's when you start trusting yourself more, right? Mm-hmm. And trusting God more, in the sense of like, I don't know why I haven't been able to do this thing until now, but I'm doing it now, and then it's over, and it's had certain consequences because I did it now that might be good or might not be so good. But, you know, I don't know how to explain that other than to just say, okay, well, that's just how it is, right? And that's at least once, for me, that's at least one step freer towards having that kind of faith or emunah, right? Which is to say that, you know, when you start to allow that part of reality, or to allow that version of reality in, like, it really does make a big difference, because that uncertainty no longer is so threatening, because there is a trust that whatever it is good and not chaos, like there is very much so if you look around, right? And, you know, even from like a more science, I mean, I know I'm sort of sorry to talk a lot, but even from like a more science perspective, it's like, well, you know, this moment right now, everything since the Big Bang, let's say, happened exactly as it did. Billions, a countless number of events and interactions mm-hmm. happened to bring this exact moment to be, right?
Yeah.
And then us with our little tiny brain go, yeah, but it should be different, you know?
Right.
We go like, I don't like how it is. This isn't good. It must be different. And then we try and fix things and whatever. And I mean, okay, there's some version of that that's real, but you know, it goes a lot deeper than just how you make your decisions, right? There is a whole lot that goes with it.
I mean, I think there's this, so one of the things that I really found so useful that I learned from this particular teacher I was saying, Sarah Udit Schneider, is this idea of paradox, that life, that like a part of growth in life, you know, you're growing when you have the ability to bear paradox. And that one of the most essential, like, so the way she defines it is like, paradox is like, when a big, big truth is coming into the world and our brains aren't big enough to hold that truth, the truth kind of splits into two mutually exclusive half-truths. And then the result of that is argument between people,
right,
who are both seeing different parts, like different, like basically like the two halves of that one truth, and like argue, you know, could argue infinitely with each other when really they're basically on two sides of the same actual same truth.
Yeah.
But our brains aren't big enough to incorporate both, and that's why it's so important to be able to bear paradox, to be able to see both sides of that truth. And one of the paradoxes that she mentioned, she has like a video series on her website, it's very powerful, and one of the paradoxes that she describes is like the paradox of like, everything's fine and I am like, can be a complete peace with everything in the world because everything's going exactly the way that it's supposed to, and the other side that's like, there's so much pain, there's so much wrong with the world, I have so much to fix, how I could never do it all by myself, I have so much to do, it's impossible. And like this, you know, this kind of action, like the need to act to address what's going wrong, like what feels like is going wrong, while also kind of having the equanimity to know that everything's really fine.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, a huge paradox, right? But it's like one that I feel like is useful to try to contain both sides of, because we don't want to pretend that everything's fine. And yet, like, part of the truth is that everything's fine. Like, part of the truth is that it's all exactly the way that it's meant to be. And we kind of came to this point after, you know, billions of years of like, this moment here is exactly as it's meant to be. And also, like, at the same time, there's like a lot that really is inconsistent with our values, inconsistent with what we believe and what we think is right, and that calls us to do things. And I think it's worth kind of trying to keep both of those perspectives as much as possible, because I think if we could kind of lull ourselves into a sense of like, everything's fine, I don't have anything to do here, Or we could like make ourselves sick being so upset about everything that's wrong. And the more that, like, somewhere in between there is the, like, or incorporating both of those, I should say, is where a kind of powerful action and also sort of personal peace lives. I'm not saying that I've mastered that, but I think that that's, you know, part of the, I'm not, but I do think that that's sort of, you know, something that can be both healing and also empowering.
Absolutely. And I really like that because it is important to, you know, sort of reach that point where, you know, and it's not that you can do it once and then it's done, but it's like in any given context, to be able to see various sides of the same situation is enormously empowering. Even if you don't do anything about it, just to be able to see it, it gives you a different way of approaching things, right? And also, like, to recognize that we make judgments of good and bad, right? Mm-hmm. In reality, it's all neutral. Things are just happening. We make them good and bad. I mean, okay, you feel free to disagree. Right. But it's like,
I mean, I think, you know, to some extent that's true. Like, to some extent, I feel like that's an enlightened way of saying things in, like, 20, you know, in this kind of, like, generation that we live in. Like, that's what people say. But, I mean, I'm going to come out and say that I think people starving is bad.
Yes, no, fair enough.
You know, I think people getting murdered is bad. You know, I don't feel like I'm, you know, breaking new ground by saying things like that.
No.
I mean, like, it's, you know, but it's part of the paradox. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's bad, but it's also perfect. And that's the thing. Like, but I'm not going to pretend that it's not bad.
No.
But
at the same
time, it's all, like, it's a part of the world that hasn't, it's a part of life, or, you know, the sparks in life, or it's a part of the world that hasn't been healed yet. And hopefully that calls us to act, but at the same time to understand that it's all part of a bigger process. I guess that's how I'd like to say it. But I don't think I would agree to, like, it's all perfect without realizing there's work to do here.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And it's not that, you know, I wasn't saying that, like, suffering and pain is good or it's meaningless or anything like that. But as we've been saying, it's part of that paradox where the way we view the world is through a lens of good and bad, right?
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's a different part of it that's, you know, beyond human comprehension, and it's very difficult to even access that because we're humans at some level, but perhaps deeper we can get some glimpse of that, right?
It's
it's complicated, like, in the sense of, like, well, if you look at, like, nature, you know, the lion that kills a deer and eats it, is that bad? I mean, it's pretty brutal and it's not fun to watch, you know, particularly if you watch the deer, like, in pain and dying. It's you know, not a fun experience. But, like, that's not, it's hard to say whether that's good or bad, right? Because it's just sort of a natural order of things. But it becomes complicated when we introduce humans into the mix because we see things from our perspective and we feel like we have choices in the world. And we do. It's not that
Certainly,
we don't have choices.
Yeah. I mean, and we have a kind of moral responsibility that we expect of a lion, right? And
right.
So we,
because we have that elevated cognition.
Right. And I think that's good that human beings have that, that it's not just, you know, like, I think we should fully embrace, like, the extent to which we can say, like, you know, that I mean that certain things, you know, are not okay with us.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I think that we should fully embrace, you know, that when we see something, you know, if you see a lion killing a deer, there's no need to stop that from happening. But obviously, if we saw a person killing another person, we would act. And I think that that's very, very good.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would do it too.
That that we are humans who are higher and more and have the opportunity, let's say, to be elevated and more more righteous, more good, more more moral in our choices than that lion does.
Yeah, because that the lion doesn't make moral decisions.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes, you know, I think there are some streams of thought that kind of say, like, you know, the lion, like, you know, you see lions eating deers and you see people at war and somehow make that sound equivalent in some way. And I just want to be on the record to say that's not how I see it. I think that's not sure. So.
Yeah. And, you know, you're very much entitled to see things exactly as you do. And, you know, I wouldn't be wanting to try and convince you otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, sure. I don't want people to believe anything. I'm not, you know, I don't have a truth that I'm saying people must believe this is true. It's like, sure. No, you know, we're just sort of figuring it out and just discussing it openly. And it's been good. But, you know, I mean, we've been speaking for like quite a while. And now before we sort of end off, I know that you had prepped a reading, which I'm very excited to hear about. Right. And it's from your book. And yeah, I mean, listen, I'm going to do a poor introduction. So perhaps you just get right into it and, you know, the magic will come from it.
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to be able to share this since we've been talking so much about mysticism. I thought we've been like talking about it for so long. I hope that people enjoy, got some value out of that.
For sure.
I wanted to share a particular part of my book that relates a little bit to that. But first, I just to set it up to help you understand. So the story is about Rachel. It's told from her point of view. She's a 17-year-old American teenager who's unexpectedly called to join a secret community of Jewish prophets. And in the process of growth that she goes through, she is a teacher. It has come to teach her. And to kind of both help her with some of the challenges of prophecy, like visions, and also, you know, kind of educate her in some bits, you know, things about Judaism and things about Jewish mysticism that is a key source of learning for her, especially in the beginning of the book. And Rachel's teacher's name is Yonatan, and he's a very interesting character. He's actually my favorite character in the book. Because he's both someone who's dealt with really, really hard things, but is also kind of set those things aside to come and do his mission, the things that he needs to do by teaching Rachel.
Nice.
So in this scene, they've been learning together for a little while, and he's taking her out. Like, so they had been meeting in a synagogue, but he took her out into the real world. He's just taking her to a park. They're just having a walk together, and then he's going to give her some guidance about meditation, which is something that that Jews can do and that in this story prophets do.
Sweet.
Okay, so here I go. So I'll start here. Yonatan, I said, do you ever have visions at inconvenient times? He nodded, his fingers stroking his beard. I know the visions can be disruptive, he said. I'd like to help you become better at receiving them. We crossed a small footbridge. It will help when you are able to meditate. Meditate? I repeated, surprised. Like Zen? I thought that was for Buddhists. He chuckled. Jewish meditation is a powerful and holy practice, he said. It will help you. We reached a small patch of green. Without another word, he sat down in the grass and leaned against one of the trees. He gestured to me to do the same. The grass was wet as I lowered myself to my knees. I folded my legs under my long skirt, keenly aware we were now alone. His eyes closed and he spoke in a reverent chant. Let's start with the Shema, he said. Do you know it? Yes, I said. He began to chant the familiar words. At first, I repeated them a bit anxiously, trying to stay alert to my surroundings. But gradually, I realized there was no danger here. Yonatan was almost in a trance. Following his example, I closed my eyes. Shema, Shema, Yisrael, Yisrael. As our words rang out, declaring the oneness of God against the background songs, sounds of birdsong, I experienced for the very first time my soul. It was an expansive halo, like a bubble of light around my body. It was bigger than I expected. A light, brighter and more real than the sun, was flowing into it from a source well beyond my view. As we sat there, meditating together, I became aware too of Yonatan's soul, warm and safe, flickering towards me like a flame. At some level, higher and deeper than anything in the physical world, I experienced the truth that we were already connected. In that moment, I understood him even more fully than the time after Yom Kippur, when I saw into his eyes and read everything there. I felt his love, his devotion to his calling, his selfless service. There was also anguish in his heart. There was not a hint of malice. The moment held such intimacy, it might have been frightening were it not so pure and holy. When I finally opened my eyes, the air around us was shimmering, like the way light bends when it's hot outside. His eyes were open too. He beamed at me. "Everything in God's world is connected," he said. Without his having to explain it, I understood what he really meant. We were connected, now and forever.
Hmm. Wow. What a great passage. I dig that. That, you know, encapsulates meditation just perfectly, right? It's that superhuman experience of just being connected and feeling the oneness with the world and with other people. Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, I'm a bit speechless, to be honest. I don't know what else to make of it, but it was wonderful. So thank you for bringing that.
Thank you. I mean, I wanted to, one of the reasons I thought I would share it is because I do think that one of the things that I've learned is, like, it's in Jewish tradition, like, one way of thinking about ourselves is not like as bodies with a soul, but a soul living in a body, you know, dressed in a body. And I think that people aren't really fully related to their souls, like, not kind of aware, like, you know, by thinking of oneself as a soul, like, not just as a body, but as a soul, and kind of be, you know, one can become sort of more connected to one sort of deeper, higher self. And I think that kind of tuning into that is maybe part of one way that one can kind of do some of this work. Mm-hmm. And I like that in this part of the story, Rachel starts to kind of tune in to, like, oh, I have a soul. And, like, this is kind of what it looks like. Not like that one could see it, but she could kind of experience it. And I think that that is something that is possible for us as human beings if we work, you know, if we put some intention into it.
Yeah, and allow ourselves to experience beyond, you know, what we've sort of had so far, you know, in that world where it's easy to shut it down, to be able to say, like, nah, there's, you know, no soul, I can't see it, and then just sort of leave it there. But then you're not even allowing yourself the opportunity to try and to have a different experience of something, and, you know, connect with that part of you that's beyond, you know, the sort of sensory world, and you know, really touches at a deeper level of connectedness to yourself and to the world and, you know, to nature or to God or to however it sort of manifests. And I truly believe that that's something that everyone can do if you give yourself the opportunity to try, right?
Yes, for sure,
Because that's the big barrier, is people will say, like, nah, I don't believe it. And then not even try. And it's like, well, I mean, why are you saying that? Like, who are you helping? You know, like, no one cares what you believe. Just see if it, just try it. Just sit in silence for a little bit and see. I also really go for it.
Oh, and I should just say, like, in terms of, like, so for some people, including me, find it really hard to sit in silence. But Judaism also has, like, this Hitpo Dedu tradition that's, like, walking meditation.
Yes.
Which I find easier for some reason. but can be just as powerful in terms of tuning into oneself and to God and nature. And so I know that, like, so for me, sitting for meditation hasn't yet in my life worked for me fully. But if some people have found that uncomfortable, like, you don't have to sit. You could actually tune in and, you know, while moving around, that would be okay too.
That's true. I actually had a guy named Nate Rifkin on the podcast a few weeks ago who spoke about the Taoist meditation of the immortal post, which is a standing meditation. So it's like a standing in place. And it was really cool because it just, you know, introduced to me this new idea of like, oh, it doesn't have to be sitting or lying down. Like, that you could do a lot. There's lots of ways to do it. And it's about figuring out what feels good for you, right? And then just doing it. And walking's a great one. Walking, where do you like to walk? Streets, nature, anywhere?
There's a park near me that I like to walk in. But yeah, I like to walk in nature. The other thing I should just say is, for people who are interested in Jewish meditation, there's a book by R.E.A. Kaplan called Jewish Meditation, which goes through a lot of the a lot of different kinds of practices that that one could try with meditation to kind of find one that works for them. And Jewish meditation has, I think, as an aim, not just sort of stillness like sort of quieting the mind, but also kind of elevation, like the idea of, you know, deepening one's connection with oneself, with God, you know, kind of climbing a spiritual ladder to get closer to God. Feeling, you know, receiving wisdom to whatever extent that is, you know, needed or appropriate. Which I find empowering. And and there are a number of different practices that one could try if one was interested.
Yeah, no, amazing. And that's really cool. And it's also good to know that it's like, you know, it's good to know for people that it's, anyone can do it, firstly. It doesn't matter what, you know, what culture you come from, what religion you're a part of, who you think it's supposed to be for or not supposed to be for. It's like, no, just, you know, this is about connecting with yourself as a human and with a divine source of sort. Whatever language you want to put it in, like, you know, fundamentally, it's something of the same, I think. And yeah, you know, it's also amazing how much it's taking like a foothold in culture today. Meditation and mindfulness is the sort of you know, pop culture-y word for it, which is fine. Like, I mean, it's, you know, similar sort of stuff, but it's really cool, and the science is catching up, and the neuroscience of it has discovered some amazing, like, you know, sort of physical characteristics that can be explained by science. Not that it has to be, but evidently it can be. So it's not some, you know, like woo-woo stuff, like, you know, sort of there's an idea of what it is. And it's also not, you know, sort of isolating yourself in a cave and sitting like a monk for 10 years to achieve enlightenment. Like, I mean, I guess that's one version of it. But that's not what, you know, most people need or want. It's just those few moments or a few minutes or whatever it is of just getting out of, you know, the sort of, I don't know, the sort of thinking reality that we live in, and just connecting with things that are greater than that. And yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, it's been transformational, I don't know, whatever, for me, and for other people that I've met who have done it as well. And yeah, it's awesome. Aria Kaplan, I'm going to look that book up. He's cool. Yeah. I like him.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I thank you very much for coming on today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. We've discussed a lot of cool stuff. And yeah, I mean, you've got a cool Kickstarter campaign coming up. Would you like to tell us about it?
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. So the theme of the book, as we've said, is Grow Into Your Gifts. It starts with this part of the book where Rachel finds like a prayer book that her grandfather had given her that says, for Rachel, may she grow into all her gifts. And nice. We are to kind of provide that as an opportunity for people. We are running a Kickstarter campaign and creating a new project that's a Grow Into Your Gifts Bat Mitzvah present. So it's for girls who are having their bat mitzvah. But there's a lot of really cool materials associated with this project. So there's like a Grow Into Your Gifts journal with a matching pen, stickers with inspirational messages, candles, and jewelry that are all sort of part of this bat mitzvah present. And we're going to empower the next generation of young Jewish women to grow into all their gifts and their full potential. And if this speaks to you, but you don't have like a bat mitzvah girl in your life right now, you can still support the campaign. You can get pieces of the project, like pieces, like the journal and the pen with a sticker. Like you can sort of support the project by getting pieces that you can enjoy for yourself or give for gifts. And if you have bat mitzvah girls in your life, it's the perfect present for them. It's at the right price point, and it's really a something that a special gift that not only is a book that will empower and inspire them and leave them feeling proud of their heritage, but also like a set of materials that can kind of help them bring that into their lives. So the Kickstarter campaign is running. Hopefully you'll be able to put it into the materials associated with the podcast.
Of course.
It's running until July 27th. And I would really love everyone's support to make this happen and to empower the next generation to grow into their full potential. I should also just say, so we've had like a very esoteric, mystical talk, which has been fascinating for both of us. But this book is really appropriate for everyone 12 and up. It's not, the book is not nearly as mystical as the conversation we've been having. It's a journey of a young adult, like you said from the beginning, dealing with adolescent anxieties, dealing with like love interests in her life and school, while also trying to deal with like, what does it mean to be a prophetess? And why do I have visions all of a sudden? And how can I be like, how can I be the best version of myself? It's appropriate for, like I said, for 12 and up. I have a teacher's guide for teachers who might want to teach it in their school. And I have a self-led guide for book clubs that would like to kind of read the book as an experience together. The book itself has a discussion guide for book clubs who've read it. So there's a lot of materials kind of associated with the book. So, and I'm always happy to come and do talks, in schools that are like kind of more grounded and less mysticism. So I'm available for that too. As well as anyone who wants to talk Jewish mysticism for me, obviously I could talk about that for an hour.
Sure.
But all of that is available on my website at growintoyourgifts.com. And I'd love to be in touch with anyone who's interested in exploring that further. And I hope that your audience will enjoy the book. It's a fun read that's also, you know, inspiring and leads people to feel both spiritually connected and sort of inspired to grow into their gifts.
Yeah, amazing. I'm sure anyone who reads it will enjoy it, and I obviously encourage everyone who's listening to go and buy it and support that Kickstarter. It's for an amazing cause, and the gifts are really great, and you know, only good things will come of it. But yeah, all the info will be linked in the description, so you can just click on there, go to the website, go to the Kickstarter, contact Yvonne. But yeah, thanks for listening. Until next time, thank you, Yvonne. I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Bye.